This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about insurance fraud crimes. I think a lot of us don't realize how important prosecuting these kinds of cases are and what it really means, and I hope you will stay with us and realize at the end of this program that this is a very significant area of the criminal law. My guests are San Mateo County Attorney Office participants, Deputy District Attorney Sharon Henry, who is the deputy in charge of the Insurance Fraud Unit, and Inspector Sam Gee of the San Mateo County District Attorney's Office, Captain Kathleen Harris of the California Department of Insurance. She also manages the Silicon Valley Regional Office of the Department, and Criminal Defense Attorney Chuck Smith, who actually formerly was a prosecutor in my office, considered to be one of the finest trial attorneys that my office had ever had. Now he tries to batter our office as he defends people in criminal cases. So welcome to all of you. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the San Mateo County Bar Association, the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, and the Family Law Section of the State Bar. And Sharon, if you would do this, could you give us a little insight of why this is such an important area for prosecution?
Okay, well, thank you for having us here. I appreciate it. Good evening. I think that insurance fraud is very important and that it impacts all of us. And I think that a lot of people really don't understand that. So many people perceive insurance fraud as a harmless act. If a person wasn't physically hurt, then, you know, it's not important. But what people don't realize is that it is a very important part of prosecution in our office and throughout the state, and it's one that has real-life consequences. For example, I've seen that over and over again in the cases that I prosecute, where, for example, an employer who is lying on the workers' compensation policy in order to get a reduced premium. I've seen cases where employees who have been injured on the job are denied their benefits. And in one particular case that Samson investigated, we had an employee who was killed on the job. And because of the employer's misrepresentation, the insurance company initially denied benefits to the surviving family. But after some investigation, the insurance company did the right thing and cover the family and awarded benefits to the family. And the person who lied on the policy and the monthly reports was prosecuted and convicted.
And what kind of sanction was that person given?
Well, in California, insurance fraud is the penalty for insurance fraud ranges from 2, 3, or 5 years in state prison. That's the maximum penalty. And the fines are, depending upon the type of insurance fraud that's committed, the fine is anywhere from $50,000 per violation to $150,000. So there are stiff penalties in California for the commission of insurance fraud.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about, Chuck, from your standpoint, what comments do you have to get us going in terms of now from the defense standpoint?
Well, sure. It's a complex area of the law, which, of course, gives us on the defense side some room to maneuver. But as Sharon was saying, it certainly in the last several years after the economic downturn back in 2008, we saw a lot more of insurance fraud being committed because employers didn't want to pay the premiums and wanted to put the money in their pockets instead or pay their employees, as it were. And so there was certainly an uptick in this kind of activity. It is economic crime. People who commit it commit felonies. And so no matter what happens in terms of the custody time, because as Sharon says, 5 years maximum in state prison, to a lot of people that doesn't sound like that much time. Mm. But the impact on their future in terms of the felony conviction, the ability to do business is enormous. And the financial penalties, not just the fines that Sharon mentioned, but the restitution amounts can break people and affect them the rest of their lives.
Would you tell us, what do you mean by restitution?
Well, for example, to use the example that Sharon was talking about, premium fraud, where an employer perhaps has 50 employees that they should be paying $100,000 for workers' compensation coverage for that year, but they only report 10 of them, and they only pay $10,000. And they do this for 5 or 6 years. The amount of premium that they should have been paying is the amount of restitution. And mm-hmm. this is not a
to the insurance company.
To the insurance company. And a lot of people think, well, insurance companies don't need it. They're wealthy anyway. Well, that argument doesn't sell with the judge. Mm-hmm. If the amount of unpaid premium that should have been paid is more than $1 million, which in a recent case that Sharon and I did battle on, it was more than $2 million, that amount is going to be awarded. There's no negotiation. It's not like you can negotiate a prison sentence. Can I have 2 years instead of three? That's negotiable. But the amount of restitution in these cases is not negotiable. The DA cannot negotiate it. The judge must order it. And that obviously can plague someone for the rest of their life.
Generally speaking, in that type of a situation, as you and Sharon have discussed, and you've mentioned, let's say, instead of paying $50,000, $10,000, so there's a bunch of employees who are not covered. What happens to them? There may be restitution to the insurance company, but what about the employees who are not covered and may have accidents and medical bills? We can't always count on the insurance companies to come forth and say, okay, we didn't get the premiums, but we're going to cover these people. Or am I wrong on that, Sharon?
Well, unfortunately, That's the impact that this kind of crime has. And there are, real life consequences.
Yeah.
And in fact, there was a recent case where another worker was killed on the job. And the employer had misrepresented the nature of his business. And had the insurance company known the risk that it was taking, it would have never insured that employer in the first place. And so after this worker was killed, the insurance company conducted some investigation and determined that this business was engaged in activity performing jobs that they didn't know, that they were not insuring for. So as a result of that, they denied the surviving benefits or the surviving family members' workers' compensation benefits. And so that's the consequence
that's devastating.
Of the lie. Yes, yeah. Most definitely.
But
most
it's devastating all the way around, because in that example, even though the insurance company may not step up and cover the surviving members of that family, the business owner, the key word there is owner, is going to be personally liable in a civil lawsuit for that loss. And if it's a business owner who owns a business, who owns real estate, these are liabilities that cannot be discharged in bankruptcy, and they will pay it.
Oh, that's good. I was not aware of that.
Sure.
That it cannot be discharged
they
in bankruptcy.
They can't hide behind the corporate entity
that's
or
wonderful.
The corporate form. They can't hide behind bankruptcy. They will be personally liable. Their house will be taken, et cetera, to pay to that surviving family.
The thing about that, Chuck, is that the surviving family is already devastated by the loss.
Sure. Yeah.
So now if the employer was not adequately covered, now they have to hire an attorney and sue the business or the employer.
Hopefully, where there are assets,
that there is something there.
Yeah.
So if the employer in the first place does the right thing and has adequate coverage, then they don't have to worry about being personally liable in a civil suit. Mm-hmm. And so it's very important that employers recognize that. And premium fraud also creates an unfair it gives an employer who is lying to the insurance company an unfair business advantage
over other employers who are
playing by the rules and paying the required workers' comp premiums.
Captain Harris, how do you investigate a case like this? Not necessarily the example we've given, although certainly if you'd like to use that as an example, but how do you go about investigating a case like this, and how do you get the information that there may be something that's going on, which is insurance fraud?
Well, the case that Sharon's talking about came to us via a suspected fraudulent claim form, meaning that an individual reported to our department that this had been occurring. And what we do is we have an intake system where we look at all of the referrals that come into the office at the department as a whole. And when we review these, when we find cases that we think have merit, are viable, we've got information, we can build upon something, we'll do our preliminary workup and investigation. From that point, we meet as a team. I talk with our supervisors. We assign the case out to a detective, and then we talk with our prosecutor. And we bring our prosecutor up to speed as to what we have and what we think can be developed from the case. So at that point, we work very closely with the prosecutor because we want to make sure we have our investigation sealed tightly, that we've covered all our bases, we've interviewed everybody that's appropriate. So when we do bring that case forward, it has been a complete investigation. So we can get our referrals from the public. We can get them on an anonymous basis. The insurance companies report to us as mandated by law. We have working relationships with our special investigated unit claims adjusters. They can call us with leads if they think something is amiss. Third-party administrators report, the WCAB medical report.
What's the WCAB?
The Work Comp Assessment Bureau.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Appeals Board, and I'm sorry about that.
Yes.
The medical board, we can get referrals from them. We also get referrals from the Contractor State Licensing Board, from various unions that are out there, and from the citizens at large.
What is the, Captain Harris, what would you say is the best way if someone, let's say an employee, who may be afraid of retaliation by the employer, but let's say an employee believes that the employer hasn't paid the proper amount of premium for workers' compensation insurance. What recommendation do you have to that employee, if that employee believes that, to try to communicate that to either the Department of Insurance or a local DA's office or what? What suggestion do you have where an employee may be worried that if his or her name becomes known to the employer may fire her? Or him.
Okay. Well, we do have protections out there that protect people who are reporting to us in good faith. So if there is an employee out there that feels their employer is doing something, I would suggest going to our website, www.insurance.ca.gov. And from that website, they'll find our hotline numbers. They'll find a reporting format. If they are familiar enough with the area that they are living in, they can call their local district attorney's office as well and report. And the district attorney's office and our offices talk to each other about these things as well. So I would stress that they would have protections that, you know, you can't, the employer's not going to be able to go after them for reporting something that they believe is illegal.
What if you have, and I know, Samson, I want to direct this one to you, if you don't mind. I know
sure.
that you are former inspector or investigator for the California Department of Insurance before coming to the San Mateo County DA's office. What if you have, when I say you, I mean someone in the public who has had some damage to his or her car, and or perhaps is someone being accused of causing an accident to someone else's vehicle, and the person believes that a body shop is really overdoing it, is charging too much or milking the whole situation. I don't know if you've dealt with many of these cases.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I was doing this early in my career at the San Mateo DA's office, I dealt with some of your brethren at the California Department of Insurance. What do you suggest that someone like that do? If you feel that a body shop is really, let's say they're charging for doing something that is, let's say, unbending the metal, and instead they're using a lot of Bondo, which is a much cheaper way of doing this that I understand. But they're charging what would cost if you're going to, let's say, replace a fender with another metal fender instead of Bondo. What suggestions do you have for someone on this?
There's actually several avenues they can go through. If you're talking about an automotive repair shop, the Bureau of Automotive Repair is a state agency, regulates repairs and what goes on there. They also have specialists that would take a car, and they can tell whether or not it's been replaced or if it's been just bondoed over. They can also contact the Department of Insurance, contact us as well. We can initiate an investigation. We can see if there are prior bar inspections of the facilities. We can check with the local police departments to find out if there were investigations and any findings that they might have with the Better Business Bureau. They can go to the Better Business Bureau and check in with them as well.
Chuck, one of the interesting things, if I can interrupt,
sure.
Inspector, one of the interesting things that I've seen, and probably experienced it as well, when there is some suspicion that a body shop is not doing the work that they're charging for, the way that law enforcement will then send in vehicles that are set up.
Right.
That's interesting how they catch people that way.
Well, sometimes we take it to that degree. If we have enough complaints, if the Bureau of Automotive Repair or Department of Insurance does a check and they see that there's quite a bit of complaints, but we've never been able to substantiate any of the allegations in the past, we may work an undercover operation. And we'll send in undercover operatives with undercover vehicles, and they'll be pre-inspected. So the Bureau of Automotive Repair knows exactly what damage they will apply, which parts of the car will cause someone to give an estimate that would normally be, you know, if it's on one side of the car and we apply the damage on both sides of the car, someone who's crooked is going to then try to tie in the rest, say this is all, or there'll be multiple points of impact.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How is that possible? You know, sometimes we work with the Highway Patrol too as well, or, you know, traffic experts who have also been part of the investigation, and they'll tell us the same thing. They'll say, you know, like with Bureau of Automotive Repair, one time I had a case, 5 points of impact on the same side of the car. He said, that's not possible for one accident, you know. I've been involved in undercover operations, as Captain Harris knows, with the Department of Insurance as well as here, where we've gone undercover to auto body shops to do exactly what Mr. Smith was describing here. And you'd be surprised. It's pretty easy.
What's pretty easy to be a crook or to?
Well,
it's
easy when I walk in and I would like kind of direct them to the damage that I want them to repair, and then I would kind of look over to pre-existing damage, and they kind of catch your eye, and they would say, you know, we could take care of that too.
Oh, that's good.
You know,
that's wonderful.
It's like, you know, that's not part of this, my estimate, but we can work something out.
Yeah,
you know, and oftentimes in the undercover operations that I've done, that's exactly what they did.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really? That's very interesting stuff.
And Chuck, with a lot of insurance companies, it's you know, unfortunately, it's easy. I don't know if I should be saying this on the air, but it's easy to get away with because, you know, they're like, you know, thousands of claims that these adjusters are you know, dealing with. And a lot of times the insurance companies don't check. But I will say this, when they do, you know, you better watch out.
Sure.
Because another way to report suspicious auto repair and auto body shops is to call your insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the insurance companies, such as State Farm and Farmers, they have people who will conduct reinspections on vehicles.
On the actual vehicle.
On the vehicles to determine whether the work has been done or not.
Captain Harris, what seems to be the highest percentage of insurance fraud cases that at least you are involved with? You're the Silicon Valley regional office is involved with. What type of insurance fraud?
Boy, Chuck, that one's a little difficult to answer because we strive to investigate what we refer to as a balanced caseload.
Mm.
So we try to actively look at all areas of insurance fraud. So of late, we've seen an uptick in the premium fraud cases, as Sharon has seen as well. We have seen an uptick in the owner give-ups being on the auto side of it, where they will actually stage the theft of the vehicle. Often the vehicle is taken to a remote area and set on fire, with the premise being for payout on the policy, and they no longer have a car payment. So there's been an uptick there. And that, I believe, falls with the downturn in the economy and things just being difficult for some people out there.
I would agree with that. I just recently prosecuted an individual who he and his wife owned a small housekeeping, house cleaning business, and he got behind on his payments. Mm-hmm. And according to his own statement, he was at a barbecue one evening, and some people approached him because he was complaining about his car payments and said, we can take care of that for you. So next thing you know, his truck is on fire in Portola Valley.
Oh.
And so he was he recently was convicted of insurance fraud.
Right.
And what is he now? Has he been sentenced yet?
He has been sentenced.
How much
he
time?
Was sentenced, I believe, to 180 days. He received 3 years supervised probation.
Mm-hmm.
But he was also charged with arson. And arson
is a very, very serious
crime. Crime. Yeah. If you're convicted of arson, you have to register for the rest of your life as an arsonist.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So these are very severe penalties that we're dealing with.
Yeah. You know, Chuck, just listening to the conversation, you think about the concept of insurance fraud or the subject of insurance fraud. You think about paper cases and boring forensic accounting. But there are a lot of these cases that really involve a lot of serious police work, a lot of sometimes dangerous police work. I had a case like one of these, dump your car, set it on fire. You know, the two guys that were hired to do it were meth addicts. And so a lot of it is true, real mm-hmm. detective work, real crime work. I'm not saying that CSI is going to come beating down Captain mm-hmm. Harris or Inspector G's door for put a show together, but it's interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. It really is.
I found it when I did it many years ago. I found it very interesting. And how Captain Harris? What about staged auto accidents? Are there many of those that you're dealing with now?
I haven't had one for quite a while, but they are out there, and I know our Southern offices deal with that because they have a very different insurance fraud schemes going on in Southern California. So what I've been learning as a captain and talking to my counterparts in the other regional offices is we're all very unique in what our particular office is seeing as a trending, but yet we're all the same in that we're fighting insurance fraud. So I haven't had it in my office, but I do know that our Southern offices do combat that on a very regular basis.
Do you have any, what would be the basis that they are combating this much, much more than obviously is happening up here in the Northern California area? What's going on down there?
Well, what I'm taking away from our conversations is I think because the Southern locations are much more heavily populated and concentrated. Los Angeles seems to be quite a hub for insurance fraud. Mm-hmm. And I think the opportunities are just a little bit different down there for coming up with some of these schemes. And it does seem at times that some of the schemes that are cooked up that way do eventually make it into our neighborhoods up here.
A lot of crooked personal injury mills. As
exactly.
well,
right.
which are more prevalent, more prevalent down there
exactly.
in Los Angeles than they are up here.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I did have one thing that I wanted to add when we were talking about Sam and the body shops is, and it goes to what Sharon had mentioned too, is an unfair advantage. When a person takes their vehicle in to be repaired, they're under the understanding that they are having the repairs as the estimate states. And when these body shops cheat on those repairs, the consumer's not really aware of it.
No.
They don't have that expertise and knowledge to go out to their car and know, oh, the door was replaced versus bondoed and repainted.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that unfair advantage is very prevalent there, with the consumer not getting what they paid for.
So they're victimizing both the consumer as well as the insurance company.
Exactly.
And also, if I may interrupt, creating very unsafe cars at the same time.
Exactly.
And that was evident in one of my recent prosecutions of a fraudulent auto body shop.
If someone believes at this point, and I'm sending this out to all four of you right now, if someone believes, since we're talking about body shop fraud, that they understood that the door would be replaced or the fender would be replaced, but instead have found out that it was bondoed, what do they do now? And what recourse would they take now if they felt that they had been cheated, that their insurance company had been cheated, or an insurance company had been cheated? What would be the statute of limitations in, say, reporting that either to the Department of Insurance, to the local DA's office, or wherever? Does anyone have a thought on that?
Well,
Sharon, please.
Okay. There is a statute of limitations on crimes in general related to insurance fraud, and actually any crime that has an element, material element of fraud. We have a statute of limitations that says 4 years from the date of this of discovery
yes.
that this case must be filed and prosecuted.
So it could well be beyond 4 years since it was repaired. If you discovered it,
yes.
then you have 4 years within which to realize, okay, if I'm going to make something out of this, I got to move now before the end of 4 years from my discovery. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. As soon as, when a victim or law enforcement is aware or should have been aware that a crime has been committed, then at that point you have 4 years from the date of discovery, because that would be the date of discovery.
But the fact of the matter is, don't sit on it. Yeah, don't sit on it.
Don't
Move.
Sit on it. These cases take a long time to investigate.
We have come to the end of the statewide version of the program. We will continue live in the Bay Area. We'll continue live on the Internet at www.kalw.org and take calls from those of you who would like to call in. It is just about 7:28 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KLW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. We're talking about insurance fraud crimes. If you have, let's say, been a victim of insurance fraud, or let's say you have been a perpetrator, and you feel you have been unfairly dealt with, and I'm not being facetious about this. Join us with your comments. I'd like to hear what you have to say, both from the standpoint of being a victim and from the standpoint of perhaps thinking that you were unfairly prosecuted. If that's the case, the number is 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. And insurance fraud can be anything involving the employment situation, what goes on, damages in the home, damages to a car, all kinds of brokers, agents could be embezzling funds that should have gone to the insurance company, premiums that should have gone to the insurance company. So don't be bashful. Join us with your call, your question, your comment, 1-415-841-4134. My guests are criminal defense attorney Chuck Smith, Captain Kathleen Harris, California Department of Insurance, and manager of the Silicon Regional Valley, and manager of the Silicon Valley Regional Office of the Department of Insurance. Samson G., an inspector with the San Mateo County District Attorney's Office, and, of course, Deputy District Attorney Sharon Henry, who's the deputy in charge of the Insurance Fraud Unit. So I welcome you with your call, your question. This was an area of law that I had when I was in the office. I'm still with the San Mateo County DA's office, but in my early career with the office, it is something that I was principally involved with. I found it fascinating. I found it amazing, the ideas and the schemes that people could come up with. It was really amazing. It's just like economic crime, where they come up with all kinds of different schemes, and you wonder, why didn't these people put their brains, their good brains, I mean, really, really intelligent brains, into something worthwhile? It's quite amazing. So join us with your comments, your calls, etc. And we've got Jack. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I'm fascinated by trends or patterns in crimes, how they sort of crop up and exist for a while, and then the carousel revolves to something else, so to speak. And there was about a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, when the economy was worse than it is now, there were these car fire cases coming up around San Francisco, and I'm sure everywhere else, other places, where people behind in their payments would set their cars on fire. I think in the East Bay, or in maybe Modesto is the car theft capital of California, you know, the cars are being dumped in the irrigation canals. Has that type of activity decreased with the economy getting better, or is it and what do the investigators think, how crime ebbs and flows or comes in trends?
Well, let's get some comments for you, Jack. Thank you very much for calling. Turn your radio back up, will you? Thanks for calling. Who would like to start on this? Anybody?
Well, I'd be interested in hearing from, you know, Captain Harris or Inspector G about how do you solve those cases where someone reports that their car is stolen and the car is found 3 days later up in the hills and it's been burnt to a crisp, maybe the wheels have been taken off. How do you prove that the car wasn't stolen?
This is Captain Harris. We get a lot of creativity in these. And generally, the individuals that I've seen that are committing the owner give-ups, it's their first attempt at this. So they're a little rough in their execution of the crime. So what you'll get is the vehicle generally turns up missing in the middle of the night. Cars generally have transponder keys now, and both set of keys are in the home. And neither, if it's a husband and wife situation, neither had left the home. They went to bed as usual. They saw the car out in the driveway. That was the last thing they saw. They went to bed. Next thing, they wake up in the morning, the car's gone. So the car's recovered. It's been burned. That triggers a red flag out of the gate. When you get to talking to the individuals and they tell you that they had both the keys, well, the cars can't be started without the transponder, so that's another red flag. You ask them if they left for the evening, went anywhere. No, we were home. And then you start talking about their cell phone records, and you take a look at those things, and what happens is you'll find from the cell phones that they start phone calls at about the time that the crime is actually being initiated, and you can find from the pinging off the cell towers where the phones were, and you can create your pattern as to how that crime actually took effect. Once you bring all that data to light to the individual and you have a conversation with them, a lot of the times you do get the confession, sometimes you don't, but with the investigation, you're bringing enough information forward for your district attorney. Is that what you're seeing, Sam?
So let me interject if I can, Captain Harris. So what you're saying is if someone's going to do this, they shouldn't have a cell phone with them?
Well, they may need their cell phone to call for somebody to pick them up.
I understand that. Inspector G, please.
Well, if they're a little more sophisticated, if they actually were in bed, and they were in bed all night long, and they had someone else do this for them, you can also use their cell phone records to see who they had contacted just prior to this incident. They may have coordinated efforts with other people or tow company friends to tow the vehicle away from the property. They would tell them exactly where it's located and how they want it done. I had a case where this person had a Porsche, and he wanted to keep the Porsche, but he wanted to report it stolen. So he drove it up to Stockton to his friend's property, this guy Acreage, and said, "Can I park it somewhere?" He goes, "Well, I got a business. Put it in the corner." And somebody in the business said, "You know, that car's been there a while. I don't know if it's stolen or not." And he contacted the authorities, and they said, sure enough, it was stolen. By that time, the insurance company had already paid them off. And we recovered the vehicle, And you should have seen his face when we said, "We have your car." Because, you know, he knows the story.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, but he was home the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, things of that nature. And if they, you know, I always look at the phone record so I can see who else I could talk to. Because if you catch them off guard and you talk to them and you suddenly say, "Hey, what's going on with this phone call that you had with so-and-so?" You were involved.
Mm-hmm. Sharon, yeah. To answer Jack's questions, what are the trends these days, though? I need some business.
Wow. You know what we see a lot of in terms of auto insurance fraud is what we call crash and buy. And that is when someone's policy has expired or was canceled due to non-payment, and they're driving around without auto insurance, and Lady Unfortune comes upon you, and you have an accident, and you're not insured. So a lot of people panic, and because they have damage to their car, mm-hmm. or they've caused damage to somebody else's car or property, or they're injured, and they realize they don't have insurance. So they then call the insurance company and renew their policy or take out a new policy. And they don't mention anything about the car accident. In a lot of cases, and I had one today in court, the guy denied when asked whether he had any prior damage, and he said no. So they're taking out these policies after the accident, and then lying to the insurance company.
Making their claim afterwards.
And then making the claim a day or two after.
Wow.
And
wow.
That is pretty prevalent. Wouldn't you say that, Captain Harris?
Yes, I would say that. That particular scheme comes all different fashions, as you know, Sharon. And we can track it in a lot of different ways, because when individuals go online to purchase their insurance, all of that date stamped and tracked. So we can actually gain information as to when they actually called the insurance company to take out that new policy or reinstate their policy. And, you know, generally, the other person, when you talk to them, may give you a completely different story from the individual that originally called to discuss the claim with their adjuster. And from that, it unfolds itself. You know, you have the person that was hit saying, "No, I'm pretty darn certain I was hit on the first of the month at 5:00. And the person that called in to cheat the insurance company had their policy reinstated on the 3rd. And they'll say that they were in the accident on the 3rd mm-hmm. at 5:00. So, you know, you can get into that and you can figure those lies out through the information you gain from the insurance company. But we do, Sharon. We get a lot of those. And as you know, they are quite creative. And there's nothing worse than a former boyfriend or girlfriend scorned. They're always a
yes.
Well, there you are.
Can I say something,
Sharon,
something
yeah,
kind of humorous?
Yeah.
There was a person who was in an accident and didn't have insurance. And so right after the accident, he calls his insurance company to renew the policy, to make a payment. And the interview is recorded. And you can actually hear on the recorded statement the car, because the key is in the door, I mean, in the ignition. He has the door open, so you can hear the binging of the car as he is in his car calling the insurance company. So it's like, huh. And it's at the time, within minutes of the accident. So it's so that was pretty incriminating evidence.
Well, you got it. In other words, the motto of this, or the logic of this, is if you're going to be a criminal, you got to be really careful. All right. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. For a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KLW listeners like you. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours, 650 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is, whatever the legal problem is. They'll do their best to find someone who's experienced to meet with you, usually face-to-face. If you have some disability and can't get into the attorney's office, I think they'll do their best to try to set up a telephone consultation for you. Depending on the county, for a half an hour consultation, it could be a low of $25 or a high of $35. That's pretty much the general thing in California. It's a great way to find out what your rights are. I remember very early in my career as a young attorney, I had a case where supposedly this person had been injured, had very serious back pains, and really was suffering. As it turned out, the insurance company inspector, or how should I say it, what's the normal name for the guy who you deal with the insurance company?
The insurance adjuster?
Yeah, the adjuster. He had a camera, a movie camera. So he went out one day to this person's home, and this guy was actually mowing his lawn, not with a gas-driven lawnmower, but with one you had to push. So there you are. So you got...
Hey, but the one that was all over the county, and Sharon can tell the story better than I can, was a woman who claimed to have been injured at work and claimed that she couldn't work and couldn't kneel down or something like that. So she was off work getting benefits on her workers' compensation policy, and they investigated her, and they found her doing what, Sam?
Having sex in the park.
Oh, my. Well, hey, that's environmentally helpful. All right.
Using the very ankle that was injured.
Okay, the number is 1-415-841-4134 for your legal rights. And Vincent, welcome to the program.
Good evening to you all. My question for you is that I non-op the car that I have because I wouldn't get charged those fees for registration. So I took the car in and got it fixed. When I got the car back, my power steering valve was broken. It wasn't broke when I took it in. And all they changed was a water pump. So I needed the receipt so that I could take the DMV and say, this is the reason I non-opted it. Now let's fix. Here's the receipt. The guy at the auto place gave me a carbon receipt that had already had a Latino or a Mexican Spanish name already for a service that was already on the receipt. So that kind of made me feel like that he was doing a tax fraud on monies that he collect on receipts that he already collect money for.
So in other words, you're saying the copy of the receipt that you got looked like it was a receipt that had originally been issued to some other consumer?
To some other consumer. It
wow.
had a whole different, yeah, it was in Spanish.
Do you think, this looks like they were trying to defraud you. Was insurance involved with this, Vincent?
No, I didn't have the insurance on it because I non-opted.
Yeah.
So the purpose of taking it in was to get a proper receipt to show why I non-opted, to re-register it, and to say, it can be on the road. So he gave me that carbon copy of another consumer that he did, and I said, this is a different, you can't give me this receipt. You need to give me a real receipt. And he just wouldn't give me a receipt and just told me to leave.
And you reported this, I hope, to the Department of Motor Vehicles?
I have not reported it to the Department of Motor Vehicles yet.
Good.
I wanted to find out
Good.
What I should do. And because he charged me $170 to put on a $21 pump.
Well, I think, what county are you in?
I'm in Oakland, California.
Okay, you're in Alameda County. You have now reported this to the Department of Motor Vehicles?
I haven't yet. I
Well, you should. You should.
Okay.
What you need to do is get, if you like, you can call me. I'll give you my phone number. Leave your name and phone number, and I'll tell you who to call. I'm not sure who's over in Alameda County, but I deal from time to time with the Department of Motor Vehicles, at least in the San Francisco and San Mateo area. Here's my number, Vincent. You can okay. call me, but you need to report this because this guy needs to be stopped. And I'm wondering if he is licensed by the Bureau of Auto Repair. Do you know?
I don't even know. That's why
I bet he's not. Did you see a sign there? Did you see a white sign with letters on it, either black or navy blue?
Those are the kind of thing, like you said, when it's not your expertise, you don't really look for that.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course. Here's my number. Here's okay. my number, and you can call, leave your name and phone number, and just say a few words about why you're calling with respect to the radio show. Here it is,
650-363-4097. 4097.
Yeah. This guy needs to be investigated. So good luck to you. But call and leave a message. You can do it right now, and I'll call you back.
Okay, great.
Probably tomorrow.
All right. Thank you. So
okay, you're very welcome.
Tomorrow, early in the morning. That would
yeah,
be great.
When you can. Okay, thank you
okay,
for calling.
Great.
All right, here we are. 1-415-841-4134 for your legal rights. It sounds like everybody is okay. Nobody's having problems with insurance fraud.
That's
either
good.
that, or we've got all the people who are doing insurance fraud listening, and they're trying to learn from this program.
Or maybe we should have had Sam tell the story about Sex in the Park earlier.
Oh yeah, yeah.
We right. generated a lot of interest.
Get a little something going here. Yeah. All right, I'll give you the number again. If you have any questions regarding whether or not you feel you've been cheated by an auto body shop, cheated by someone who at work with respect to your employer, at work with respect to you're not finding that you're covered by workers' comp, or something that may involve insurance, our number is 1-415-841-4134. And I hope you will call. Captain Harris, do you have any other... let's say, significant issues you'd like to throw on the table here?
I could throw out medical provider fraud.
Oh.
Something that we're starting to see.
I thought there was a lot of Medicare or Medi-Cal fraud that was going on for quite some time.
Right. I'm talking about on your medical insurance.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe went to see your chiropractor for treatment, and the chiropractor provided that session for you, but unbeknownst to you, they continued billing your insurance carrier for services that you weren't there for, or you were there for services and they're upcoding and billing for things that you didn't have happen. So we're seeing a bit of that happen, and that obviously drives up the costs on the healthcare side of things too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So,
well, to add to that, Chuck, the providers also they stay under the radar, so they'll charge the insurance company for, let's say, you know, 36 sessions versus 72, let's say, and they'll charge you, like, for the week you came in twice a week, they'll charge you three times a week. They're charging carrier three times a week, and no one will know about this because the carrier will just pay the bill.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The person that's receiving the care doesn't see the bill.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no way to validate that.
Mm-hmm.
We have providers that do that all the time. Sometimes in the rings that we look into, they have people come in and they sign in ahead of time, or they would say, you know what, just go to this attorney, go to this chiropractor, go to this doctor, and we'll take care of you. And next you know it, the insurance company gets billed for like 90 visits when they actually have not.
I wonder if the insurance companies should start a policy of at least with some kind of experiment of sending to their insureds copies of these bills that are being provided by the providers so that the insured, the patient, can see, gee, I don't remember being there three times that week. I was only there once. I'm wondering if there's any effort to try to get insurance companies to do that, Captain Harris.
I haven't heard of anything. I know that we've got quite a lot of savvy consumers out there, and a case in particular that we had quite a while back is an insured had received their mail from being out of the country on vacation, and when they went through, they reviewed their billings and found that their doctor had billed for about a dozen or so visits that they couldn't have been to because they hadn't been in the country for over a month. So,
well, isn't that the approach, the telepathic approach to medical care?
Yeah.
I mean, that's something new, isn't it?
But, you know,
wonderful.
Right. So it always pays to pay attention to your mail and what you're getting from your insurance provider, and to take a little, you know, bit of time to look at those bills and review it and make sure that, you know, they are billing for a day you were actually there for treatment.
And also on your credit card statements, you should check those very carefully, because a lot of people make their co-payments by credit card.
Exactly.
You should check your credit card statements very carefully to make sure that you're not being additionally charged for visits that you weren't even there at. All right, Dell, welcome to your legal rights. Dell?
Question that... Oh, some time ago, this person, you know, hit my husband, turning illegal left turn. And later on, the lady wrote the number down for the police, and they checked, and they said this guy was driving without insurance. But I don't know how, when these people ride around without insurance. I thought you have to have insurance to register with DMV.
So what do you have a question, or is that
yeah,
just...
Yes, my question is how can these people drive around without insurance, but they own a car?
A lot of times, insurance policies will expire or canceled by the insurance company because the person hasn't made the payments. So oftentimes, you know, a person will initially be insured and then stop making payments and become uninsured. And perhaps that's what happened in the case involving your husband.
Did you and your husband have uninsured motorist coverage, Dow?
Yes, we do.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you do. Right. I mean, you know, it's very common also for people to be driving cars and they don't even have licenses from the Department of Motor Vehicles. So, you know, if they'll do that, they're going to do the same thing with insurance. So thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
Take care. All right, we've got a few people who would like to talk to you all. Bob, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you doing this
morning? All right, thank you.
So my problem is probably happening more frequently than everybody even understands, but I have a Jeep, and I had a guy who has a repair shop, and he'd been doing the servicing on my car, and I had run over a parking thing, and so I tore up the bottom of my bumper. And he said, oh, no problem, we can, you know, get that fixed up real quickly. And so he fixed it, claim on the insurance. I came back, it didn't look like the other the way it did before. And I asked him, I said, is that the correct piece from the dealer? He goes, oh, well, you know, we have our own manufacturer that we utilize. And it turned out that they weren't manufacturing the exact same piece. So then he goes and gets the second piece from the dealer, and he cuts into that piece to add in the piece that was missing from the actually authorized dealer. But the insurance company paid for the repair as if it was going to be done the same as, you know, as it would come off the showroom or from the dealer.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really realize it was a big problem, but over the course of time, it was discoloring. The chrome piece kept popping out. I'd take it back. He says, oh, I'll fix it. Well, unfortunately, I was riding on the freeway, and I hit something, and it tore the piece off again. I took it to a different shop, and the guy says, this isn't even the correct piece for the car.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know who checks those things. I guess it's kind of up to the consumer to know better, but when you take your car to a shop that's supposed to be, you know, a reputable place, and they repair it, and your insurance company comes out and authorizes the repair, what do you do when a repair is not done properly?
Well, frankly, what contribution did you, or what portion of the bill did you have to pay, if anything?
I paid my deductible.
How much?
The deductible, I think, at the time was $250.
$250. And then how much was the total cost of the so-called repair?
So that was the other interesting thing. the repair was costing at about $1,000.
Yeah.
And then when I just had it redone again, same exact pieces, my deductible has gone up because I changed my insurance coverage. But the whole repair only cost $600.
Yeah. You know what I would suggest on this, Bob? How long ago is this that this took place, the first repair?
Several years.
Oh, okay. You're unfortunately most likely beyond the statute of limitations.
Well,
go ahead.
Bob, is it?
It's Bob.
Yeah.
Bob, when did you discover this issue?
Well, that was the challenge, is that I discovered it relatively quickly, and I kept going back for him to fix the problem I was having. And, you know, over the course of time, you just think, oh, maybe it's just one of those things. But the real point I'm making here is the part wasn't even manufactured for Jeep.
Yeah.
It was one of those off-site, made in China or India or someplace else, which is, what do they call them, aftermarket pieces. It's not the correct piece.
Yeah.
But they make it close enough so that these guys that are doing these insurance claims will order them for a vehicle. So when you leave there, you think it's correct.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I had not looked at other Jeeps, same year model, I wouldn't have probably noticed that the chrome was missing.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I asked about the chrome, he said, I'll fix it. The guys who repaired it this last week showed me where he actually cut into the old, whatever they call them, the off-market piece. They had to cut into it, and that's why the chrome wouldn't stick, because it kept popping out of the...
Well, let me do this, Bob, because we're getting close to the end of the program. Do you have some further comment for Bob?
Well, I was going to say, Bob, if this occurred, if you discovered it, let's say, less than 4 years ago, you can still report that to, you should still report it to the Bureau of Automotive Repair, regardless of when it happened.
Yeah, yeah.
But if it's within the 4 years from the date that you discovered it, you can report it to the insurance company and to the Department of Insurance or to your local district attorney's office.
Good stuff. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
You guys are doing a great job here.
Thank you, Bob,
thank you
very much. I think we have time for one very... do we have time, Eric, for one brief... let me see. Daniel, do you have about a 30-second comment or question?
I have a question.
How about 30 seconds? Can you do it in 30 seconds?
Yeah, sure.
Go ahead.
I have two questions.
Go ahead.
One is, I got this traffic light ticket. I don't know if it's me or not. Is it still applying? Is it work still in California?
That's not insurance fraud, counties do it, some don't.
We can't deal with that one, Daniel. Do you have a question with regard to insurance fraud?
No.
Oh, you don't? Okay, well, I'm sorry. we're focusing on insurance fraud tonight. I'm sorry we can't help you on that one. And good luck with that traffic ticket. And I think we have just about come to the end of the program. I want to thank you very much for joining us on the program. San Mateo County Deputy District Attorney Sharon Henry, Deputy in Charge of the Insurance Fraud Unit, and Inspector Samson G. of the District Attorney's Office. Captain Kathleen Harris, California Department of Insurance, Manager of the Silicon Valley Regional Office, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
And my good friend Chuck Smith, Criminal Defense Attorney, former great prosecutor.
Thank you.
Just a few years ago, and time flies, doesn't it? Funding for, let me do this. Production staff members, your legal rights, Eric Jansen. Eric, nice to have you with us tonight. And production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for your legal rights is made possible by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the San Mateo County Bar Association, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar. And next week, in case you are thinking of getting married, either your first time, your second time, your third time, we are going to be talking about prenuptial agreements. That's how you try to protect your assets before you get hitched. So I'm going to have a couple of certified specialists in family law, Jeremy Klein, who's the chair of the family law section of the Board of Legal Specialization, and certified specialist Yasmin Mehmet. I think you'll find it very interesting if you're at all interested either in getting married, maybe even getting divorced. Thank you very much for listening to Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney.